Oh, there we go. Okay, there we go. Good morning. Calling to order this meeting of the House Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development Finance and Policy Committee. I'm Representative Dave Pinto, the co-chair, along with my colleague, Chair Dave Baker. Welcome to all. Going to do a little bit of business before we have the motion to approve the minutes and kind of move on with the content of the agenda today. Members, I think you're aware, members of the public as well, that a budget agreement was reached between DFL and GOP leaders announced on Saturday. In our area, the agreement includes a $50 million cut both this biennium and also $50 million cut the following biennium for the agencies within our jurisdiction, including DEED, DLI, BMS, Explore Minnesota, et cetera. What is not included in that agreement as it was announced, but it's been communicated to Chair Baker and me and very important folks to understand, is that included in that agreement among the leaders is excluding funding out of the Workforce Development Fund, at least at this point in session. That's used to fund a variety of workforce programs. It's not the same as the general fund. And the agreement pauses further new spending from that fund by this committee and any other in the House. And there'll be continued negotiations among leaders about that, and certainly with the input of Chair Baker and me. So just want to acknowledge that for folks. We are going to be making some hard choices in the next few days and into next week as we pass a budget, as we consider kind of how to adjust things. And we're hopeful that there may be changes as things continue to move through the process. In the meantime, though, we're still hearing bills that have been brought forward. We're going to hear some bills this morning. I know that this evening DFL members are meeting with some organizations who have funding proposals. I know that GOP members have had meetings with a variety of groups as well. So we'll have to see where things land. But just know that the chairs are committed not only to a broader responsible state budget, but an area as well, to make sure that the good work that we've been doing in this area continues as best as it can. I'll call on Chair Baker to see what comments he wishes to make, sir.
Yeah, and thank you, Chair Pinto. Again, the numbers are going to be challenging to reach, but we are committed to reaching that because mm-hmm. our teams have asked us to do that. To the folks out there that are have been in front of our committee and that are coming today and this week as well, understand your projects are important to us, and we're going to hear them, because right now we're still in a very fluid situation where we will try to get as much of this funded as we can, whether it's through competitive grants, whether it's through direct appropriations. We are yet to kind of get to that point, but your projects and your work here is important to us, and so we just want to make sure that we are very interested in hearing from you still, and Chair Pinto and I are talking every single day, twice a day, to try to make sure that our team on this on both sides are being communicated to about the things that we are working through, things that we are agreeing on, and some things that we're not agreeing on just yet. But at the end of the day, we are committed to getting a budget out of our committee. And with that, again, I look forward to, again, continuing the work with Chair Pinto to make sure we find a bipartisan way to get the bill out of here. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Yeah, and to reiterate that this is the first step coming out of our committee. There's quite a lot of work yet to be done in the broader session, and we'll continue to work together on that along with all of you. Today, members, this presentation and bills were scheduled before we got that announcement. We're continuing to move forward as we discussed. This is an area of particular passion for me that we'll be hearing a number of bills and a presentation on child care and early learning, which is a critical workforce and economic development issue, and again, continue those conversations. So before we do that, though, we have a set of minutes, and I wonder, Chair Baker, you were presiding, and perhaps you'd be willing to move approval of our minutes from March 27.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Any additions or corrections, members? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the March 27th minutes, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes, and those minutes are approved. And so I'll have Erica Moss head up to the testifiers table. Scott Marquardt, you can head up there as well if you'd like, and Daryl Dannon sit up front as well. Members, we will hear this presentation on child care and early learning in our state. And so please identify yourself and proceed as you are ready.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Erica Moss, and I work for an organization called Think Small. I haven't been in front of this committee before. Thank you for having me. Today, I'm going to be speaking in my role as staff for an organization called Minnesota Business for Early Learning. It's Minnesota's most recent business-led effort in support of early childhood care and education. Over the last 20 years, there's been an ongoing engagement from the business community related to early learning. Most notably, in 2005, members of the Minnesota business and business and community leaders came together to form the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation in response to a growing body of research showing that addressing educational disparities needed to start much earlier than the K-12 years. This group found that lack of investment in early care and education was hurting workforce competitiveness, making communities less equitable, and burdening taxpayers. As I mentioned, a key body of research that this group was focused on is research around brain development. And I'm going to talk a little bit about this. And just in case you think you're in the wrong meeting this morning, brain development is economic development. I'll explain why. So you can see on the slide the absolute explosion in brain development that happens between birth and age 6. During this period, the brain forms over a million neural connections per second, driven by sensory experiences, interaction with caregivers, and exploration of the environment. We often talk about children's brains as sponges, but during this period, children's brains aren't just passively soaking up information. They're actively building and refining neural connections that will form a foundation for how they'll think, learn, and interact for the rest of their lives. Because this brain development is a continuous process that happens every moment, positive experiences like nurturing interactions and exposure to language strengthen neural pathways, while adverse conditions such as toxic stress or neglect disrupt brain architecture and can lead to long-term developmental challenges, such as increased vulnerability to mental illness or poor executive function. So this is a very important time in children's lives. Most agree that this is the most important period in human development due to that rapid brain growth that I mentioned. However, this graphic shows that annual per-person spending by age is just hundreds of dollars for children under age 2, while it's about $13 per child per year for children once they reach the K-12 stages of their lives. This lack of investment has long-term impact on individual children. You see here a graph. The center line is age. And you can see that gaps by socioeconomic status of the family are largely set by age 5, and they don't close by age 14. You can also see on the far left-hand side of this graph that those gaps open very early. Gaps can be measured as early as 9 months, by 18 months, gaps in vocabulary development between different groups of children can already be quite wide. These gaps grow because of factors such as limited access to quality early care and education, which I'll discuss from this point forward to mean childcare settings like homes and centers and also preschools, fewer language-rich interactions, and exposure to chronic stress. On this next slide, you can also see how that lack of investment in our youngest children also impacts employers in our economy. So this chart is showing the growing importance of social skills in the labor market. I'll talk a little bit later about the immediate impact on workforce participation, and I know my colleagues will highlight that as well. But social skills are obviously a foundational element of success, both in school and beyond. And those social skills, like communication, empathy, cooperation, and conflict resolution, are set in the early years, before children reach kindergarten. Early childhood research consistently demonstrates the lasting impact of these types of non-cognitive skills on long-term success. For example, children who develop self-regulation and motivation are more likely to succeed academically, avoid risky behaviors, and achieve better employment outcomes as adults. In this way, fostering non-cognitive skills by supporting access to early care and education creates a multiplier effect, driving sustained personal and economic benefits. And you can see those benefits here on this, what is known as the Heckman curve, after James Heckman, who's a Nobel laureate economist who studies human capital development. This chart details the public return on investment for interventions at different ages. The curve shows that investments in early childhood, particularly from birth to 5, yield the highest economic returns because they coincide with that critical period of brain development and skill formation I described earlier. Programs focused on the early years create a foundation for lifelong learning and productivity with benefits such as higher earnings, better health outcomes, and reduced crime. As individuals age, the cost of remediation increases and the effectiveness of interventions decreases. You can also see here something that I mentioned on the last slide. Skills acquired early in life enhance the ability to acquire additional skills later. Skills beget skills. I've just told you a bit about how lack of public investment in early care and education leads to disparities in education outcomes, long-term workforce challenges, and higher government costs. Now I'll tell you a bit about how that impacts the early care and education sector, otherwise known as the childcare sector. And I know my colleagues are going to chime in on this too, so I'll be relatively brief. First, I'm sure that you have all heard that childcare is difficult to find. Quality childcare is even harder to find. Simply put, the childcare sector in Minnesota is in a meltdown with challenges related to affordability, quality, and workforce wages. Uh-oh, I got my pages mixed up. Sorry, Mr. Chair. This lack of access to early care and education is having a significant impact on employers. On this graphic, you see how often employers mention childcare as a barrier to attracting and retaining talent. That's the beginning. Once employers are able to find and hire someone, if that person has young children, often their work is disrupted due to lack of accessible and affordable childcare. It leads to issues such as absenteeism and reduced productivity. Families are struggling as well. The high cost of early care and education further depresses the supply. On this slide, you can see that families in all groups are paying large shares of their income toward early care and education. This highlights a stark reality. We ask the most from parents when they have the least. During the early years of children's lives, when childcare costs are highest and incomes are often their lowest, parents face impossible financial and logistical challenges related to finding affordable childcare, often being put in a difficult position of having to drop out of the workforce, go into debt, or forgo other investments in their futures. On the early care and education provider side, the early childhood workforce faces significant challenges as well, including low pay. You can see here the average wage for childcare workers is just under $16 an hour, high stress, and limited professional development opportunities, which contribute to chronic staff shortages and high staff turnover. Compensation in the sector is among the lowest of any profession, with many educators earning poverty-level wages despite the critical role they play in child development. These conditions lead to burnout and difficulty recruiting qualified candidates. Obviously, the workforce crisis directly impacts access to childcare for families, as understaffed programs cannot serve all children. Excuse me. So if care is unaffordable for parents, why aren't childcare providers decreasing prices to a point that parents find affordable? I can tell you that is because childcare providers have razor-thin profit margins. Even with an underpaid workforce, they can't do that. And why aren't parents agreeing to pay more for childcare to allow providers to raise wages and stay in business? Because parents struggling to make ends meet can't afford to do that. This is the childcare conundrum. Parents cannot pay more, and providers cannot do it for less. This is why public investment is so critically important. You can see here that public investments made during COVID, those three dashed lines represent the three COVID relief packages. Investments made during COVID in those packages have been shown to stabilize the childcare sector in many ways that allowed for accelerated labor force participation of mothers. Those investments helped keep providers open, increased wages for early educators, and expanded access to subsidies for families. I believe you'll hear some of these successful approaches reflected in bills today. This is an area where we know what to do. We just aren't doing nearly enough of it. Finally, members, I'll bring you back to this return on investment slide. I know the chair spoke at the beginning, both chairs at the beginning of the hearing about the budget situation this committee faces. Public investments in early care and education are economic development. and their economic development investments with a high public return. You can see here where that return comes from: increased high school graduation, college matriculation, economic development and personal income, decreased special education. I'll just stop there for a second. One of the largest budget drivers in the out years is rising special education costs. Investments in early childhood education have been shown very recently in states that are doing these types of things right now to reduce, significantly reduce, special education costs. Dependence on social welfare and costs related to law enforcement. And I know you'll have a testifier speaking a bit later from that sector. Building brains results in compounding societal benefits that are good for our children, communities, and economy. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the testimony. I think we'll have the other two presenters go, and we'll see if there's a few questions that folks have. Mr. Marquardt, we'll have you identify yourself, and please proceed.
Thank you, and good morning, Chair Pinto, Chair Baker, and members of the committee. My name is Scott Marquardt, president of Southwest Initiative Foundation, one of the six Minnesota Initiative Foundations. Headquartered in Hutchinson, our region encompasses the 18 counties and two Native nations of Southwest Minnesota, from Ortonville to Jackson and from Laverne to Litchfield. As we approach our 40th birthday in 2026, the Initiative Foundations express our sincerest thanks and appreciation to the state for your trust and partnership since our inception. We are very grateful in your investments. For me, this is my 25th year of doing economic development in Greater Minnesota, and I can say beyond a reasonable doubt that no issue has ever rang louder than the shortage of childcare capacity impacting our communities. Mm-hmm. If I receive a call for assistance from a local economic developer, an employer, or community champion, there's a high likelihood it would be regarding childcare. I cannot adequately stress how urgent this issue continues to be. Prior to the pandemic, I would say to anyone who would listen that this is the biggest economic development issue facing our region. I say that louder even more today. I want to acknowledge and honor and celebrate all the work that's been done to build and retain capacity over the past few years with public and private investments, but the fact remained a lot of work still needs to be done. According to First Children's Finance data, just in my rural region alone, there's a shortage of 4,570 childcare spots. This severe shortage has a significant impact on our employers as they work to attract and retain the talent needed to compete globally, to attract and retain entrepreneurs and small businesses up and down our main streets and commercial corridors, and for our public sector employers to attract and retain the talent needed to provide critical community need services. Our state's leading economic development thought leaders and associations are putting this on your platform, and you'll hear from Darielle later. This is a statewide issue impacting rural and urban. I acknowledge that. I believe that rural communities are especially impacted in how this hinders the retention and expansion of critical community need businesses in rural areas like veterinary medicine, access to food, agribusiness, construction, elder care, and manufacturing. Customized community-led solutions are essential for success and progress. One size does definitely not fit all in addressing child care. What's needed in one of my communities of Buffalo Lake, population 680, is very different than my largest community of Wilmer, and it's very different than what our urban and metro friends need. So we are grateful to this committee, to DEED, and to our ecosystem partners for the trust and flexibility that we could deploy this money right-sized and fit to the community, customized. We are grateful for that trust. You have an informational brochure from the Initiative Foundations that provides powerful examples and stories of our work and for how state investments have been a catalyst and, I believe, a but-for in leading the creation and retention of quality affording child care. Community planning, technical assistance, business planning, engagement of the private sector, workforce development, and other both regional and hyper-local investments have been made possible. We are so grateful. We do not do this work alone. Partnership, again, with employers, chambers of commerce, colleges, faith institutions, economic development agencies, tribal officials. It's how we do business, is collaboration. Your investments have made it possible for us to deliver thousands of hours of technical assistance statewide, have countless collaborations, and work with over 200 communities. As I close, I just want to tell the story about Nobles County, home to Worthington on the I-90 corridor, which has the highest percentage of my region's overall child care shortage, again, based upon First Children's Finance data. With your support, we are able to invest in local leaders and champions, mobilizing private investment, supporting planning and strategy, community engagement, providing a significant amount of technical assistance, business planning and training, and being a catalyst for prospective childcare entrepreneurs in a community that's home to a significant bioscience, healthcare, manufacturing, and food sector. As we face continued retirements, workforce shortages, increases in expenses such as insurance, financial challenges, and other hurdles, I respectfully and strongly ask you to please continue prioritizing these investments in community-based childcare solutions so that we can support our entrepreneurs, our leaders, and the future of our state's economy. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Marquardt. Thanks for your work. Turning to Darrell Dannon, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Darrell Dannon, and I'm here representing the Economic Development Association of Minnesota, or EDAM. So EDAM is an Economic Development Association of Minnesota. We have about 550 members, and those folks represent all corners of the state, so economic development associations, cities, and likewise. And I'm here because, as my cohorts already mentioned, economic development is childcare, and it's something that we've just increasingly been seeing. And certainly when I talk to members, particularly of the House, who've just been door knocking somewhat recently, it sounded like for you too, that was often at the door, a thing that you heard over and over again. And us too, once upon a time, probably 5 years ago, childcare was not on EDAM's legislative agenda. But it is today because it is something, as my cohorts already mentioned, that really impacts the ability for employers to recruit and retain employees. And Minnesota, as folks have somewhat shared, Minnesota is short about 80,000 childcare slots as of June of 2024. So that's data from the First Children's Finance. And those childcare shortages are found in all corners of the state. But the good news is this is an improvement from the height, which about 2 years ago, we required about 100,000 units of childcare slots or childcare slots. So that's been an improvement, as folks have mentioned, due in part and probably primarily because of the investments that the state has made in this space. It is then imperative that the state probably continue to make some similar investments, if at all possible. And of course, we're aware of the shortages of funding and your constraints, but this, as folks have already mentioned, is a place where we can really make constructive and important investments. It's also important to note that in Greater Minnesota, that area of the state continues to struggle more with childcare shortages than the metro area. And in fact, almost the entirety of the 10,000 units that have been sort of closed, those needed childcare slots, have been in the metro area. Only 798 of those slots were in. And of course, it's not due to the good work of my colleagues here, but very few of those slots were created in Greater Minnesota. And as you can imagine, that means for folks in Greater Minnesota, they're often driving half an hour, 45 minutes to drop their kids off, and then half an hour, 45 minutes back to that employment. So it really impacts the ability of people to find and retain that employment. And of course, when parents can't find childcare, it keeps them out of the workforce. They can't participate or they can't participate fully. And Minnesota has a high labor force participation rate. It's one of the highest in the country. We're about sixth. But we have also one of the highest participation rates. We're tied with a couple of other states. Highest participation rates of parents with children under 6 years old. And we have about 311,000 workers, or about 10% of our labor force is those parents with young children.
I have to have you wrap up if you can, Ms. Dannon.
Absolutely. And so just, again, driving home the point that childcare is economic development, and certainly we hope that members of this committee will recognize that and make those investments as you're thinking about the budget. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your work. And members, we have a number of bills that kind of come at this from different angles. I wanted to start with this just to set some context. Are there any quick questions that folks have? I suspect that the testifiers here will stick around. Mr. Chair, Chair Baker.
No, I want to thank you for this presentation. I want to know, I haven't heard about the Minnesota Business for Early Learning, you know, sector or that organization. I just want to say thank you, Ms. Moss, for bringing this forward. I have heard from many folks, including Mr. Marquardt, many times about this issue. This has been presented in a different way for me to kind of open up some new little neurons in my little brain, yeah, actually. So this is important to see this. And, again, as we enter this final week of our work this week, Chair Pinto, This is really important for us to hear today. So that was more of just a thank you and really not a question, because I know we got to keep moving. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Baker. And I did want to highlight the statistic earlier, in case folks missed it. The age of, I know some of the folks here have little babies, a million synapses per second, millions connections are being made in those brains, as opposed to, I'm glad the connections are made in your brain. I think at our age, Mr. Chair, not a million per second, very many, many fewer than that, but a million per second in those early months. So good. Chair, I'm so glad that you appreciate this. Thank you, testifiers. We're going to go to the first bill then, and we will have, I'll ask Vice Chair Greenman if she's willing to move House File 2582 to bring that before us on behalf of Representative Lee.
So moved.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice Chair Greenman. And Representative Lee, I think what we're going to do is have you present your bill. Members, there's an amendment to this bill that, in a way, is sort of it's a related topic, but coming at it from a different angle. Something, Representative Lee, that will have you present your bill as is, and then we can do the amendment and kind of do the second half of it, if that makes sense. Representative Lee?
Sure. I also drafted my presentation to kind of incorporate both. So
we can do it that way, of course. Yeah, yeah. Then, yeah, Representative Greenman, if you'll move the A1 as well.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. And so, and members, the A1, the bill itself appropriates some funds to expand our capacity of child care through one method, and then the A1 does so through another method. Representative Lee, am I kind of summarizing that okay from your perspective?
Yep, that works, and I can fill in.
We'll get the amendment added on if that's okay with members, and then that way you can just present your bill. So, members, any discussion to the A1? Seeing none, all in favor of approval of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that passes. So, Representative Lee, to your bill.
Great.
As amended.
Good morning. Thank you, chairs and committee members. Appreciate the opportunity to present House File 2582 as amended. And I guess I will continue the conversation that childcare at its core is absolutely a workforce issue. The previous presenters did a really good job of laying things out, but I want to just put a finer point on it and say that on the one side, you have families that are in need of safe and affordable childcare so that the parents can go to work. And so there are two main challenges here. As you mentioned, or as you heard earlier, there's one, high costs in relation to income and other expenses, obviously, of raising a family. And then two, accessibility. Are there even slots within a reasonable driving distance? And, there's this interaction of accessibility and high costs, right? When childcare is not available, this disrupts the productivity of parents in hours worked and also work quality. And then on the other side, for the childcare industry, if that's what you can call it, we have a worker retention issue because of the low wages, right? We want qualified early childhood educators, but the reality is the median wage for a childcare worker is actually $10 lower than the average median wage across our entire state for all professionals. And then among professionals in the education space, childcare workers have the lowest median wage, right? When you think about child workers, they're at the bottom compared to even preschool teachers and then elementary school teachers and, your food service workers. And so I think that's really important. And then something that we all value is health insurance. A startling statistic that you should keep in mind is that childcare workers are actually 10% less likely to have health insurance than the average state worker. And so, what we're doing is not right. As you heard, between 0 and 5, our kids' brains develop at one of the fastest rates, right? But the professionals that we have taking care of them and teaching them, because that's what it is, right? Childcare work is teaching and educating our littles. These people are workers that we actually treat the worst. So, and I think another thing I want you to keep in mind is the result that when DEED projects job growth in our state, this is projected to go up by 4.6% in the next couple of years, but the growth of childcare jobs, right, people taking these and this availability is only 2.6, and so there isn't parity. I've presented all these problems. How are we solving this? House File 2582 would do a couple of things. So the underlying bill appropriates $2.5 million in fiscal years 26 and 27 to support the continuation of a very successful child care facility revitalization grant program. And then the amendment that we just adopted would provide funding for DEED's Child Care Economic Development Grant Program, which provides grants to communities across the state to increase the supply of child care providers in a variety of ways that we can talk about. But I know we have limited time, so I'm going to turn it over to Suzanne Pearl, who's going to talk about the facilities grants, and we can have a discussion with members about the amendment.
That sounds good. Yeah. So, Ms. Pearl, you can identify yourself, proceed. I'll just direct members that, yeah, so the underlying bill is the grant program through DCYF that I think Ms. Pearl is going to talk about, and then there's the separate piece and the amendment that is the DEED grant program. And members, you've got a materials in your packet, which is a report from the DEED Child Care Office about the about that grant program. So, Ms. Pearl, please identify yourself, proceed.
Good morning. My name is Suzanne Pearl. I'm the Minnesota Director for First Children's Finance. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you all this morning. I'm going to take just a second. This is our first time in front of this committee, and since Scott Marquardt so kindly mentioned our name a couple of times, we are a nonprofit organization and community development financial institution whose focus is on the business side of childcare. We were founded almost 35 years ago in Minnesota. We provide access to capital through loans and grants to childcare businesses. Our entire portfolio is childcare businesses. We provide technical assistance and consulting to childcare providers, many of whom did not get into the business with an MBA or a business background. So we help them develop business plans, financial analysis. We provide training on marketing. We also do quite a bit of community development work through our Rural Child Care Innovation Program, which is what Mr. Marquardt was referencing earlier. But today, I'd like to talk to you about the Minnesota Child Care Facility Revitalization Grants Program. FCF has implemented this program since 2022 through a contract with DCYF. And I'll note that you have a couple of things in your packets. There is this report we did last year with the major, the ARPA-funded impact, and then a supplement for our impact from just this past year. The aim of the program is to provide funding for childcare businesses to address critical facility maintenance and repair issues, knowing that they are required to meet certain facility-related safety standards to maintain licensing, and knowing that many childcare businesses do not have the cash flow or access to capital required to complete even minor repairs. The program set a grant award cap of $20,000 for centers and $15,000 for licensed family childcare. Applications were based on evaluated based on how much the funds would impact the health and safety of kids, whether they address licensing needs, and the level of child care need in their location. All providers in Minnesota are eligible for this program, including family child care, privately owned child care centers, and tribally licensed child care. Our average grant was around $9,000. If a provider needs to replace a fence or flooring, this grant helps them afford that cost without having to resort to credit cards or a HELOC or other high-cost financing. Last year, the legislature provided funding to extend the program for one more year. We accepted applications in November 2024 for the one round of grants we'd be able to fund this year. We received 650 applications, but were only able to fund 104, so about one in six. The need for this program remains.
And I will say, probably just need to have you just take another minute, just because time is very tight here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, I'd love to tell you about the program integrity measures we've built into this. This was an equitable program where providers could receive 90% upfront, have a certain period of time to do the grants, and then we went through every single receipt that came to us. They had to provide documentation, photographic evidence of their project completion before receiving the remaining 10%. Of the almost 3,500 grants we've made, only 2% have been reported to DHS Office of Inspector General for noncompliance. We know that OIG is following up. I'll just say one last thing. Without further funding, the program will end. This is to help keep providers in business. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I do want to direct members' attention to that there's the one pager in addition to the report of just nearly part of the reason that it was important to me to have this committee hear about this. Nearly 8,000 slots were created as a result of this program. And in some cases, that's just like paying for a fence in somebody's backyard so we can make sure that kids can be safe back there. And suddenly you've got a whole bunch of additional slots created just because of paying for a fence somebody couldn't pay for. So this has been a very powerful program in my experience. So Ms. Pearl, thank you so much for your testimony. We'll turn to Dariel Dannon then, coming back. And please proceed with your testimony. And again, I ask you to keep it just a couple minutes if you can.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair. My name again is Dariel Dannon. I'm here on behalf of EDEM, the Economic Development Association of Minnesota. And we just wanted to share our support for the Child Care Economic Development Grants. It's a great program. It's a quality program. That one as well has been shown to increase the number of slots. And in fact, that's the focus of the program, to increase child care slots in the state of Minnesota. The program did receive a boost in funding in the 24-25 biennium of $13 million. So that program is due to drop down to just $3 million for the base biennium of 26-27. And so one of our items is to really encourage you, as you're thinking about making constructive investments, to make an investment in this program. And let me tell very briefly two quick stories. One in War Road, where the community came together, identified that they had a child care shortage, and they also identified that they had some space in their senior facility. And so what they've done is the community donated, they utilized state investments, and they created childcare in the senior housing space, which is a pretty cool opportunity and program. There's also a great program that I'll just call out real quick in Wilmer, where through this program, BEAD provided a grant of $200,000 to the Kandy Ojai County and the city of Wilmer. The city also came together with some of their funds and Southwest Initiative Foundation, which our earlier colleague testified about. They also provided some of their own resources. And they came together and created additional child care slots, actually quite a few, 935 additional child care slots in the Kandy Ojai County area. To address the child care shortage. So two really key programs, and we're very excited about this program. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Dannon. We'll see. Are there anybody else in the audience wish to testify on this bill as amended? Not hearing any. We'll close that testimony. Then, members, I'll just to confirm, because this can get a little bit confusing, the bill as introduced is about the Facility Revitalization Grant Program. We've got the report, then this one-pager with this very helpful information. I encourage folks to look at it. And then the A1 contains, I think this is just the original language from the DEED Child Care Grant Program, but would appropriate more funds to that. So, member discussion questions anybody may have. Representative Zlesnikar, pardon me, yeah.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you to the testifiers, too. My question is, when I'm looking through the data from DEED, it looks to me from the data that Greater Minnesota has a 16% drop in adequate access to childcare compared to the rest of the region. And so when I'm looking at that data, I'm wondering if there's a mechanism that you're going to focus on expanding capacity for Greater Minnesota, how you're going to allocate that this money to match where we see the slots, because I know in Greater Minnesota, the family child care in Northeast and Northwest has dropped 50%, and the slots for centers have dropped in Northeast and Northwest. So I'm curious to see your thoughts on allocation, if it's going to match that, if the funding is going to go to the Northeast, Northwest, where we see that the gaps are significant compared to all of Minnesota or Metro.
Representative Lee, I can go to you. I was going to figure that each of your testifiers can speak on behalf of each of the grant programs. Representative Lee, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. So I'm not sure where that number is from, but on the whole, yes, child care access is there's a greater need in Greater Minnesota. And the DEED program is designed so that 50% of the DEED funds are allocated specifically only for Greater Minnesota.
I suspect that Ms. Pearl can probably speak to the Facility Revitalization Grant Program, which I notice is disproportionately going to Greater Minnesota. But maybe, Ms. Pearl, you could talk about that, and then we can go to Ms. Dannon about the DEED program.
About that? Yeah, for the Facility Grant Program, which is a little bit different, we did design it to focus on child care programs that had one site. So you could see that the breakdown went to family child care, and the 58% of the funding went to Greater Minnesota. Our theory is that smaller businesses have less capacity to be pursuing access to capital, so the majority of the grant funding went to either licensed family child care or independent child care centers.
So, Representative Lee, yeah.
Oh, and I would just note that just because of like size and scale, family child care providers are really important in Greater Minnesota. And so if you look at the percentage of the funds that were dedicated to family child care providers, like two-thirds of those funds or two-thirds of the family child care providers that were served from the facilities grants were actually in Greater Minnesota.
And two-thirds of the funding from the program went to family child care, and the great majority went to Greater Minnesota. So that's that piece. And then, Ms. Dana, maybe you can talk about if you know about the DEED grant program. So it's kind of two different grant programs here.
Absolutely, Chair. Chair, members of the committee. So the DEED program as well, and you can see in the amendment, it's required that at least 50% of the funds are spent in Greater Minnesota. However, the program is a competitive program, and it's tied partially to sort of the dire need. And so that program actually originated just focused on Greater Minnesota, added the metro area at a later and typically, and you can see sort of historical funding, because I think you have the report in your packets, historical funding has shown that that's primarily focused on grant awards in Greater Minnesota. So that'll continue to be a focus, and there is that requirement that at least 50% be focused there.
Also note, if you look towards the back of the report from the Office of Child Care Community Partnerships, there are two other grant programs that are specific and exclusive to Greater Minnesota as well. So a lot of focus. So a lot of need there, but I think we can be proud of a lot of focus as well. Other member questions, discussion before we move on to the next bill? Not seeing any. Thank you so much, Representative Lee. Last words on your bill as amended.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. I mean, I guess I would just leave folks with the thought that multiple reports indicate the critical role that quality childcare plays in hiring and retaining staff for all businesses. And so for our state economy to be resilient, especially during these uncertain times, we need to increase our stability and adaptability of of childcare across the state. And so funding House File 2582 would be a good first step, despite the target. And I would just note that, as you saw earlier, $1 invested in early childhood yields at least a $16 return, amongst all the other things. So thanks.
Thank you so much. Thanks to you, testifiers. Two terrific grant programs. I want to make members be aware, and we'll see where things can go. With that, the chair lays over House File 2582. For future consideration. Members, we got a little bit of a reordering here just because of some schedule issues. So the next bill is 2518. We'll hear 2266 a little bit later. So Representative Katiza Witun, I believe, is here, making her way up. Representative Greenman, I'm going to ask you again, if I can, to move 2518 to bring that before us.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. And I think that we do not have an amendment. And so Representative Katiza Witun, please proceed with presenting your bill.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and Chair Baker, for having this hearing today, focusing on child care and early learning. We know that the child care workforce is the backbone of everybody else's workforce and is a huge driver in the success of our overall economy. So I'm thrilled to be back in workforce. I served on economic development last session and served on workforce in the past. So it's great to be amongst people who really share the same concerns about how we support our workforce and make sure that we have people in jobs, and so that small businesses can grow and succeed, and that families and parents can earn a living wage and support their families as they grow. So I am here with Women Venture. Again, I have done some tremendous work with them in the past. They are economic organization that supports female entrepreneurs across many different areas, but they have some amazing online training that is available for particularly childcare business owners across the state, making sure that they can turn a profit, actually, which is very rare in the childcare industry, for those of you who aren't aware. I know that the earlier presentation was probably really helpful for those of you who haven't had the opportunity to serve on children and families, with myself and Chair Pinto, previously. So without further ado, I will turn it over to my testifier, and she could share some of the really great work that they're doing right now.
Thank you so much, Representative Katiza Witun, Chair Katiza Witun, and we'll have our first testifier. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Co-Chair Pinto, Co-Chair Baker, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Leanne Rasajak. I'm CEO of Women Venture. Thank you, Representative Katiza Witun, for your continued leadership and support. Women Venture has been around for nearly 50 years. We are a community development financial institution, a U.S. Small Business Administration Women's Business Center, and microlender. So today I'm going to talk with you about both childcare as well as food and agriculture businesses across Minnesota. So we have served thousands of Minnesotans in workforce and economic development. Since 2022, we have served clients in 80 out of our 87 counties in Minnesota. Today, I'm here to speak to an $8 million request that will continue to accelerate economic and community impact within childcare, food, and agriculture small businesses. Before I go into that, though, I do want to share with you an update from when we were last here with you. Women Venture is tracking ahead of schedule and delivering on our results from the state's initial investment. We appreciate your support.
And I might ask you just back up a tiny bit from the microphone if you can, because it's just echoing quite a bit.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's no problem. Yep. Good.
Is this better?
I think that's better. Yeah, I think you're good. Yep.
The mics in this room are much better than in 120.
They also tend to be variable, though. It's interesting. So, yeah, so it can be hard to track it. So, yeah, please
All right,
continue.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me know and if it's better. Okay. So I want to talk with you about the state's initial investment and how we are tracking kind of well ahead in terms of the metrics and who we're serving. At this point in time, as of yesterday, March 31st, we've served nearly 800 clients, delivered more than 3,400 service hours, helped create or sustain more than 2,200 jobs, and have created more than 50 businesses. Helped more than, is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Tech support. Helped more than 700 businesses stay open. We've deployed more than almost $450,000 in grants to small businesses and entrepreneurs, and also $725,000 in loan capital. So we teed up this project at the end of 2023 going into 2024. Several of these metrics have outperformed our original projections. With $8 million, you can imagine how the investment will not only accelerate our shared goals of attracting and retaining childcare, food, and agriculture businesses across our state. The outcomes are seen in both our urban and our rural communities by helping families secure quality childcare, add to our workforce, and continue building our Main Street vibrancy. So this budget supports a comprehensive two-year plan to stabilize and expand childcare and food and agriculture businesses across the state, where we help to address the sustainability and growth of these critical industries, addressing workforce shortages and enhancing our economic opportunities. I'm thrilled today that our Women Venture client, Tyra Pear of Can I Have Some, is here to share the impact of investing in entrepreneurs in food and agriculture. She is a graduate of our training program, Launched and Growing, and is involved in our food system and actively supports other indigenous food producers. As we think about childcare business services and food and ag businesses, this is to increase and stabilize the supply of our childcare by supporting both licensed family and center providers through small business loans, grants, technical assistance, and also by offering a shared services model that helps them to focus on running their business utilizing financial management software, with business consulting services and business training. Similar to our food and ag businesses, it's a complex food industry, food-based businesses, and we have identified an opportunity to serve the entirety of the supply chain from farm to table. And there are several key growth stages in this subset where Women Venture believes it can provide value support to our entrepreneurs in this industry through business advisement, training, and access to capital. Thank you for your consideration of increasing funding while expanding services that support the growth of entrepreneurship in industries that nurture and care for our communities. Again, we are outpacing what we originally projected and delivering for all of Minnesota through our programs.
Thank you so much for your testimony and your work. Tyra Payer, welcome to the committee. If you can identify yourself and please proceed with your testimony.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tyra Payer. My pronouns are they, them, and I am a member of the Trend Mountain Band of Chippewa from Belcourt, North Dakota. I'm the owner of Can I Have Some, a food business based in St. Paul, District 64. I create high-quality, locally sourced products, and I'm expanding into growing more of my own produce for canning and food preservation. Women Venture has been a huge support in helping me grow. I completed their launch and growing program, received business consultations, and used their guidance to help plan for expansion. With the grant I received from Women Venture, I am able to move into a commercial kitchen this year, working alongside other indigenous food producers, purchase necessary equipment to meet compliance standards, invest in marketing materials for farmers markets, obtain a wholesale license to expand to retail spaces. This support is helping me scale my business while staying engaged in the local food system and uplifting other Indigenous food producers. Thank you for the opportunity to share my story and for supporting small businesses like mine.
Thank you for sharing your testimony. You had me from the first line when you said Senate District 64, which is my Senate district. So totally locked me in at that point. Thank you so much. Anybody else in the audience wish to testify on the bill, first of all? So not seeing any, we'll close testimony. Members, and so this is, of course, there's the child care piece of this, and then also the food agriculture piece you sort of brought along for today as well. Members, questions, discussion about this bill and this this proposal? Look to see if there are at all. And I guess not seeing any. So Chair Katiza Witun, any comments that you wish to make about this bill and kind of it's part of the context of the day as well? Chair Katiza Witun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks again for my testifiers being here with us this morning to really give us a clear picture on the impact that Women Venture as a standalone organization and the CDFI have on small business, small entrepreneurs, particularly women and non-binary folks. I think that, you know, we recognize that both the childcare early learning industry as well as food service and hospitality are very women-dominated industries in terms of small business ownership, and we know that they also have really tremendous rates of failure. Unfortunately, it's hard to make it, and so I think the benefit of having an organization like Women Venture, who has almost 50 years of experience, being able to contact with people on the ground versus some of our really larger grant programs that might be a little bit of a hindrance for individual entrepreneurs to kind of stand up and go through that grant process. I think that just that additional personal touch that Women Venture can add really does a great service to people all across the state as they begin their business journey.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thanks to your testifiers. Thanks to Chair Katiza Witun for your leadership on behalf of, as you would term them, Minnesotans. Is often the word that you use in a good call. So thank you all so much. With that, the chair lays over House File 2518 for future consideration. And then Chair Katiza Witun, you're going to stay up there. The next bill, members, would have been introduced if we'd had a session yesterday, but I think we did some miscalculating. There was not a session yesterday, which is why this bill is just for now being heard informationally. It will show up this next bill. It is in the packet as coded AS-068. Again, it will be introduced as a bill later this afternoon, also from Women Venture. Chair, let me see, and so I guess there's nothing else to do with that. So Chair Katiza Witun, will you please present the language of AS-068 and your future bill?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I am really pleased to be here along with my county sheriff, Devonna Witt, here in Hennepin County. This is a proposal that would stand up a pilot program to increase child care access for our law enforcement officers and first responders in Hennepin County with the long-term benefit of giving us reports so that we can stand up similar programs across the state of Minnesota. Sheriff Witt has been investing and researching into this area for many, many years, and I think that this proposal marries two areas that we all really care very much about: public safety and child care access and the impact that it has on recruitment and retention. So I will ask Sheriff Witt to give us a little bit more detail about how this proposal would work in practice and the impact that it would have on her staff at the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office.
Thank you, Chair Katiza Witun. And Sheriff, a pleasure to have you. Please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Sheriff Devonna Witt, Hennepin County. Thank you all for having me here today. I do appreciate this time, and thank you for that introduction.
I might need to have you tip now. We've got the opposite problem. I need you to tip. Yeah, there you go. Thank you. And then please continue. Just want to make sure we can hear you.
Thank you. I'm excited to discuss a bill that has the potential to address one of law enforcement's challenges. It is no secret that law enforcement has faced a recruitment and retention crisis over the past several years. As an adjunct professor of juvenile justice, I watched my classes shrink from over 20 students to under 10. Over the past 2 years, my classes again began growing. Unfortunately, many of those students, especially young women, face barriers that prevent them from entering law enforcement, even when they have the proper education and qualifications. I've had students request to bring their kids to class. It should be noted that I teach in the evening. One of the biggest barriers is childcare. Law enforcement and first responders work long, unpredictable shifts. Many childcare options don't fit their schedules. I have a saying at the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, it's not about recruiting the individual, it's about recruiting the family, and that's making sure that people who have stressful, long shift jobs are not worried about their families when they're doing such dangerous work. Childcare is a leading reason for women, leading reason women leave or never enter law enforcement. Nationwide, women make up for only 16% of officers and 5% of police leadership. Yet women are over 50% of civilian law enforcement professionals. We need a strategy to both attract women into the licensed and correctional roles and retain women who currently are the backbone of our crucial civilian workforce. Even though I'm calling out women specifically, I hear frequently from the men in our agency who either need to leave or take a demotion for a position that they deserve, or change divisions due to childcare duties. Again, it's about recruiting the family, not the individual. We have seen solutions elsewhere. In San Diego, my good friend Sheriff Martinez of the San Diego Sheriff's Office, they had a law enforcement specific childcare center opened in 2024. I was able to see this model before it was implemented, and now it's seeing over 50 children of their law enforcement deputies in San Diego. This program has served as a model that can be adopted in different parts of the country. And there's even a bipartisan federal bill that seeks to extend grants to states implementing programs like this. Our bill will leverage Workforce Development Fund resources to recruit a cohort of providers that will serve the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office employees. The Hennepin County Sheriff's Office has around 900 employees working across Hennepin County, several of them with irregular and night shift duties. Our agency is a great pilot for this model because of our size and geographic diversity. Women Venture, who we are partnering with, has the expertise to recruit, train, and most importantly, coordinate this cohort of providers. This is mostly a logistics, planning, and coordination issue, and we believe the model could become self-sufficient down the road. Excuse me. This isn't just the right thing to do, it's the smart thing to do. It costs over $100,000 on average to recruit and train a police officer. Benefits like affordable, convenient childcare will help agencies recruit and retain licensed peace officers, corrections officers, our telecommunicators, and all other first responders. Excuse me. What we are asking is to support the family, it's not just the individual. And I want to, again, thank you for this time. We ask first responders to be there for us in emergencies, and it's time that we are there for them with childcare solutions that work. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sheriff, and thank you for your broader leadership. We appreciate you being here and all of that and all that work. Is there anybody else who wants to testify on this bill, first of all? Not seeing anybody, so we'll close testimony then. And then member discussion questions. Chair Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, thank you for this idea. Again, I support the concept. I think it's with the shift schedules and that kind of thing, I guess I really get it. We are all behind our public safety officers. Thank you, Sheriff, for your great service. Has this been approached and been brought in front of the Hennepin County Board for their idea to this? Again, we're asking for a statewide grant for one county. So I'm just curious if the county commissioners have had a response to this or if they've had a request in front of them at this point.
Sheriff.
I apologize. Yeah. I have not brought it to our county board of commissioners. Again, the plan in San Diego, it was led through the state, and I was following suit with how it was implemented there, as San Diego Sheriff's Office is not the only law enforcement agency in the state to do it. I do believe that our friends across the river, Dakota County Sheriff's Office, is also interested in this as well.
And Chair Baker?
Just a quick follow-up. Again,
yeah.
I think just
yeah.
leveraging dollars locally, again, it's very focused on one county in the state. There's 86 other counties. And again, I like this idea. I just think if it's going to get more merit and more recognition for the statewide support for this, we need to know what is the skin in the game for Hennepin County. So that would be just a question and a comment, maybe just for the author to kind of, as this moves forward. That's my only comment.
Yeah, no, Chair Baker, I'll have some thoughts on that too, but I'll go to Chair Katisa-Witoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that that point, Chair Baker. I've been in conversations with Representative Witte in Dakota because I know that particularly I think the Burnsville Sheriff's Office has dug into what they've been doing out in San Diego effectively, and the sheriff did mention that there were some federal drawdown funds that were available to San Diego Sheriff's Department. I am in plans to have conversation with Congresswoman Kelly Morrison, who used to be our colleague here at the House, and just because I know that how this might look in different parts of the state could be a little bit different, but that's kind of the idea on the reports. Obviously, Hennepin County has the largest population in the state, but very metro-focused potentially, and then also some suburban areas. So I think in potential partnership with Representative Witte and his sheriff's department in Dakota, and then it potentially looking at I would be willing to expand it out to like a three county pilot or something along those lines. So if any of our rural members here in the room would be interested in talking more about that, I would be happy to do so. I think that would really help us garner some additional information about how to expand statewide ultimately. But Women Venture does have, like I said, some of those virtual options, and they already have operations in different parts of the state. So I think that they would really be able to help guide that process, even if we just remain with Hennepin at this point in time.
Well, and I'll maybe a comment, and Chair, I really appreciate what you're saying. And maybe just for all of us, this morning is to a certain extent about seeing different angles on this crisis coming from different places. And so we're hearing a collection of ideas. And I will say for myself, when I look at this, I say there's a need all around the state, right, for our law enforcement officers and first responders. I'll also say there's a need for all sorts of needed occupations and professions outside of those, right? I mean, this is just a need everywhere. So this is a particular idea that's come to us. One could imagine a situation, and again, setting the budget constraints as the, you know, our immediate situation aside, we may say, hey, this is something we need statewide, but we want to try it out in a pilot. This is a proposed pilot in this county. Maybe we say proposed pilot someplace else. I just kind of want to have us think from kind of a problem-solving perspective. So this is one piece of brainstorming, as opposed to this being exactly a thing that we'd fund. I mean, it's a great idea itself, but mostly just to remind ourselves, wow, this is a challenge everywhere. And boy, if we can't deal with it for our law enforcement officers and first responders in the county like Hennepin, we know there's a real problem all across the state. So if that makes sense, Mr. Chair, different angles on things. Other questions, comments anybody has? Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you to the representative for bringing this bill, and thank you, Chair, for being here today. I, too, have shared your concern about 24-hour response. Those workers that do 24-hour shift work, it has been concerning for me for childcare. And so to your point, I commend you for looking at this because I've been working on this with nursing homes, assisted livings, hospitals have this challenge, and I've said this in Children and Families when I started, that those that work shift work are in a different scenario. So when we look at access to childcare, it is not just a Monday through Friday. It is holidays, it is weekends, it is third shift, it's second shift, and so we have a significant void, and that's an additional stress to the sheriffs, to the 911 dispatch, to firefighters, to nursing assistants, to nurses, to doctors, no matter where they are working 24-hour shift work, to be on call, you know, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. And then that is a profession that if somebody's not coming in for the next shift, you just don't send you just don't leave it empty. Somebody else is staying for another mandatory shift, which that person often has children. So I commend you for looking at this. I think this is giving us an idea for shift workers and for those who have a different style of work and a different responsibility to the public. And I commend you for bringing the idea, and I think we have a lot of work to do in this area. So thank you for bringing it for our attention.
Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. Anybody else? Oh, Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for recognizing the fact that we're dealing with a layered number of problems across this space. You know, as a dad around this table with a young child, I just also want to recognize that, you know, we have very high costs of childcare in Minnesota. My family doesn't choose to have our child in childcare, in part because, as I was reading from an article in the St. Cloud Times from just last week, it's over $20,000 per child for an infant for someone the same age as my son. And at the same time, Minnesota is a top tax state in our region in the upper Midwest. And the balance of these things don't really work well together. So I want us to be cautious about spending additional public dollars in this space because we really need to be focused upon the outcomes that are benefiting families. And as we've heard, whether it's this proposal right here or the others, there are going to be discrepancies and inequities created when government is choosing winners and losers, whether that's through a competitive grant process or not. It's going to create those inequities. And so we have to recognize that as a legislature and be more cognizant of family budgets and realize that Minnesotans can better spend the money themselves rather than choosing the winners and losers here in St. Paul.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Yeah, you've got the past and current children and families chairs who are both jumping at the bit to respond to that. I guess I'll let Chair Khadiza Batoon go, even though I very much want to. But Chair Khadiza Batoon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, I hear the difficulty that you're speaking to as a parent. I myself have four children, 11 and under, and when I first ran for the legislature, they were 4, 3, and 2. We were spending over twice our mortgage payment on childcare at that time. This is something that is a real and ongoing difficulty for parents, not only in Minnesota, but across the state, across the country, and particularly actually in states who have vastly different regulatory climates. So that's something that, Representative Zalesnikar is on Children and Families with me this year. She was with us last term. And so we spend a lot of time talking about that, and I think that it's really important that we explore the efficacy of some of the existing regulations that we have to make sure that they're doing what we need them to do. But as Ms. Moss said earlier on in her presentation, if we look at the amount of public investment that the state puts in, or even that the federal government puts in, to children under the age of 5, it's basically pennies on the dollar, maybe even farthings. It's not very much at all. And so compared to the public investment that we stand up in our K-12 education system, on average $13,000 per pupil here in Minnesota. When we look at the brain development and how these children are going to grow and become productive members of society and potentially business owners themselves, potentially legislators creating the rules of the future. And I think that when we look at the impact that investment can have in the first few years, months and years of life, there really is no better place to put our money because we all benefit when kids get off to a great start.
Yeah. Thank you. And I'll maybe just note, and certainly we'll get back to you, Representative Schultz, if you want to say something further. This is a challenge in every state, in the deepest red states, and the difference between the cost in Minnesota for childcare and the cost in those states is minuscule compared to the cost in all 50 states and then the rest of the developed world where make sure that there is childcare and early learning that families have that can work and can benefit for them. And so I think that probably is a basic philosophical difference too about sort of does government play a role in helping people to afford their lives? I understand what you're saying about government, you know, getting out of the way more. This is something where it really is a pay me now or pay way more later. And we've got a sheriff sitting up there, and I certainly see my role as a prosecutor where, you know, we fail to get kids off to a great start at the beginning and all kinds of problems come later. So, but I'd love, as the parent of a young child, I'd love to talk to you further offline. Representative Schultz, anything further that you want to say? Response to any of this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just note for the record, again, I'm referencing an article from last week in the St. Cloud Times that says that the annual cost of infant care in Minnesota is $22,569 a year. That's the third highest in the country, only rivaling Massachusetts and Washington, D.C. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schultz, and I'm happy to talk to you further about why that may be and again, the cost compared to other states. Okay, so I think anything else from anybody? Doesn't look like it. Representative Cherkutizwatun, final words on AS-068.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for having me again to talk about these ideas and how we can better help and support the children and families of the state of Minnesota and, in addition, our workforce and our economy. I think that Representative Zalesnikar brought up a really important point, and I was actually going to talk about a little bit in my close about the importance of shift work. And it's not just in the law enforcement agency, right? So it's in the other care industries hospitality and mining and all of these different industries across the state. So I think that when we take a look at a very centralized and critical part of our population and the work that they do to keep us all safe, this would be one step in the right direction of making the investment to take care of them while they are working so hard to take care of us. So appreciate the committee's discussion today and appreciate the consideration for a potential investment in this area.
Thank you so much, Chair Cotizzi-Batun. Thank you, Chair, for your work. With that, the Chair, well, there's nothing to lay over because that bill wasn't before us informationally, so there we go. We appreciate the presentation, though. And Representative Centimura, we'll ask you to come up. Vice Chair Greenman, if you can move House File 2266 to bring that before us.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Representative Centimura, as you settle in, I wonder if, since the amendment is, again, like with the earlier bill, is kind of a separate concept, if you want to talk about your bill first, and then we do the amendment?
Yes.
Okay, good. We'll do that. So welcome to the committee. So glad to have you. And please present House File 2266 to us. And then, again, members, we'll deal with the A1 amendment in a little bit because it's a somewhat different concept, though connected. Please.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you, Chair Baker. As you can see, finding good child care is hard to do. So I'm happy to be before you today to talk about HF2266. As a former Workforce Development Committee member and as a current Children and Families Committee member, I really want to thank you for having this important discussion today. I know that we talk in this committee a lot about the barriers that individuals face to employment, and child care is certainly a huge barrier for employees in the state of Minnesota. I come to you today with HF2266, which presents one kind of small solution in that larger package of how we think about transforming the childcare industry to make sure that more people are able to access employment and keep employment. So this bill would be an appropriation to the YWCA of Minneapolis. The YWCA of Minneapolis is a longstanding community institution in the community that I represent, and they are doing statewide work to ensure that we have quality trained childcare workers across our state. So this would be an appropriation of $350,000 a year, which would provide training to eligible individuals across our state in job skills training, career counseling, job placement. These are folks that really know the childcare industry, are helping people get their CDL license, and I'm going to turn it over to my testifiers to share more about the work that they do.
Okay, so whoever's going to go first, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and all committee members. My name is Stephanie Thomas, and I'm the Vice President of Early Childhood Education and Workforce Development at the YWCA Minneapolis. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 2266 to continue funding for the YWCA Early Childhood Education Training Program. Our early childhood field is desperate for new teachers, and this program is helping to fill that need across the state. One of our programs, our program gives participants foundational employment skills and trains and supports participants in obtaining a CDL. That's a foundational credential in the early childhood field that qualifies participants to enter the field as an early childhood teacher. The program can take up to 9 months and typically is virtual. We have 140 hours of training and professional development, 500 hours of classroom practicum, support in developing a portfolio that explains your teaching philosophy, and outside scored observation and time standardized tests. Our program is unique in its support, and it offers to the assistance for participants in that success things like computers, testing, computer basic skills, travel stipends, life needs, referrals, and support. We work with participants to understand their own beliefs and how their beliefs impact their teaching, and then build those skills in order to support the success of each child that they work with from there on. Through the years, our program has worked through development to be able to expand our program into Greater Minnesota, and we're currently serving 11 separate counties. Studies have shown the benefits that youth receive from being taught by teachers who have similar experiences to them. In the past two-year grant cycle, this funding has allowed us to work with 144 participants, helping 66 of those graduate with their CDA, with another 18 on track to graduate before June 30th. 63 of those participants have identified as colors, people of color, 15% have identified as immigrants, and 55% have dependent children, and 32% are single mothers. We've built strong connections to centers across Minnesota and have a steady stream of participants reaching out to start our program. Without new teachers in the field, the state will struggle to meet the need of working families, causing parents to leave the workforce and affecting our ability to ensure children are ready for kindergarten. Continued support will allow us to serve 120 plus participants in the new grant cycle, with 40 to 50% of those people earning a CDA and working in the early childhood field, with 70 to 80% of those people leaving the program with foundational employment skills to gain increased employment. Over the next 2 years, we plan to further develop partnerships with centers and support services in order to serve participants and expand our reach to more of Minnesota. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you so much for your testimony, and then we'll go to the second testifier. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and Chair Baker and the esteemed members of the committee. My name is Lauren Spencer, and I am the assistant director at the YWCA Children's Center South location. I am here to urge you to continue the funding for the YWCA Minneapolis's Workforce Development Program. I speak not only as a proud employee of the YWCA, but as someone whose life was directly transformed by this program. In 2022, I was a young, low-income mother with dreams of advancing in life and very few resources. I knew I wanted to expand my career in early childhood education, but the path felt out of reach. The cost of earning a child development associate or a CDA credential was something I simply could not afford. But thanks to the YWCA's workforce development program, I was able to earn my CDA for free, and that opportunity changed the direction of my life. A few months after completing my CDA, I enrolled in college. The CDA gave me the confidence and motivation to keep going. I earned my associate degree this past May, and I am now on track to complete my bachelor's this next May. Congrats. In April 2024, I joined the YWCA Minneapolis as the assistant director of the South location. This month marks one full year in a job that I absolutely love. I get to support children, families, and fellow educators in meaningful ways every day, and none of it would have been possible without the initial opportunity the YWCA gave me. As a single mother, being able to advance in life and create a better future for my children means everything. That's why I'm so passionate about this program, not just because it helped me, but because I want others to have the same opportunities I did. I love recommending this pathway to aspiring teachers who are just like I was, eager to grow, but unsure how to take the first step. For many, without the YWCA, it would be unattainable. I know it was for me. Please continue to invest in this vital program. When you fund workforce development at the YWCA, you are opening doors for people who are ready to work hard and build brighter futures. I'm proud to be living proof of what's possible. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Congratulations to you on your career path. And thank you for your work in early childhood education. You're a brain builder and an economy supporter and a family supporter and a workforce supporter too, and all that work. So thank you very much. And I'll just clarify that this YWCA program is actually statewide, that it's statewide, correct? I think I'd asked that question in a private meeting as well. If you could just clarify that for us, Ms. Thomas.
Yes, Chair and Committee. It is a virtual program, and so we can serve anybody who contacts us within the state of Minnesota.
Okay, thank you so much. And then I think what we'll do then is do the A1 amendment now and have testimony on that. And then members, we can discuss the two pieces. Both parts have to do with the workforce. And so Representative Sensenmura, does that make sense to you? We'll do that at this point.
Yeah.
And so Representative Greenman, I'll ask you if you can move the A1 amendment.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Representative Sensenmura, I understand the, maybe you could just briefly describe the A1 amendment, if that's okay.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Pinto, for allowing Representative Greenman to move this. I consider this a very friendly amendment. I know that You just heard a bill talking about potentials for free or subsidized childcare for police officers who do incredible and important work in our community. I think that this kind of is of the same vein. This would be thinking about free or subsidized childcare for people who are providing the childcare. You know, I want to note that the bill that you just previously heard, you know, talking about Hennepin County, the starting salary for a Minneapolis police officer is $90,000. The average salary for a childcare worker in my community in Minneapolis is $35,000. So, you know,
and no benefits.
Yeah. So when we're thinking about, you know, who really needs support to go into their profession, stay in the profession, I think certainly childcare workers are one of those people that we should be thinking about. So this would provide full or partially subsidized childcare for individuals who are qualify for early learning scholarships or CCAP, and regular care for children or essential for the operation of a childcare center provider.
Okay. Any questions or discussion just about the putting the bill in the shape? The author wishes, in collaboration with Representative Greenman and the chair. I'm not seeing any, so all in favor of approval of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Motion passes. And now we're going to have some testimony in the A1 amendment. So please, whoever's going to go first, identify yourself and proceed. Welcome.
My name is Deborah Messenger, and I'm here in support of one of my employees who is working currently as a teacher.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being here. And then, yeah, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Tiffany Behrens. I'm a single mother of three children, a five-year-old who just one who just turned three yesterday, and a seven-month-old baby. I'm honored to be here today to testify in support of the HF2266, specifically the A1 amendment that provides funding for individuals who are on the waiting list for their early learning scholarship program and who also regularly care for children. I myself am both. My seven-month-old is on the waiting list for a scholarship, and I work as a child care teacher. My two older children have early learning scholarships, thankfully, and I have no idea how long my baby will be on the waiting list, but with current news pointing to budget shortfalls, I don't expect it to come soon. I work full-time in the preschool classroom at All Ages and Faces Academy in St. Paul. I make $18 an hour, which is clearly not a wage that allows me or anyone else working in childcare to afford childcare ourselves. Infant care at my center would cost around $100 per day. That's over two-thirds of what I make in one day. There's no world in which that math works. Sorry. You are likely wondering where my seven-month-old is when I am working. She's with my mom at home. We're currently living in an RV with my three children and my mom. We've been homeless for several months because prior to having my baby, I worked as a server. When my baby came, I was out of work for a month or two, which made it impossible to make my rent. I fell behind and we were put out. I'm working hard to get us back into stable housing. My mother, who is wonderful, is not an ideal caregiver for a baby who is on the verge of crawling, especially in the confines of an RV. We wouldn't be able to hire her actually to work in the child care center because of the physical demands it requires. She is on disability. She has had both knees replaced and surgeries on both of her feet and currently has a broken arm. It is a very, very long day for her to watch my child. If I were able to get a scholarship for my youngest, it would be life-changing. Those of us who are working in child care are doing some of the most important work there is and making some of the lowest wages there are. Is it any wonder that it is a challenge to find teachers who want to stay? I urge you to support this bill and give childcare workers that support they need so they can continue to support our youngest Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your testimony and for sharing your experience. It's really helpful to inform us, and thank you for your important work.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Is there anybody else who wants to testify on the bill as amended? Kind of the two different provisions, so not seeing any, we'll close that up. Member questions, discussions that folks have. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sensormira. So for the individuals who would benefit from the additional training, as I understand, what would the cost be for them to do that if they were doing it themselves?
Representative Sensormira.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you for the question, Representative Schultz. And my phone a friend, ask the folks from the YWCA to come back up here.
Okay, well, Chef, yeah, please proceed answering the question if you can. Ms. Thomas.
Chair and committee members, Stephanie Thomas. And the training is free for participants to come into. All the fees and costs and books and things are covered through the funding that we receive for the program.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So am I understanding this, that if we don't fund this, then that will come at a cost to someone?
Ms. Stephanie Thomas.
Sorry. Chair and committee members, yes. If people were to do it on their own, they would individually have to pay, which is why many people don't move from an aide position to a teaching position. A teaching position gives them a much higher wage and longer security in the field. So many people stay at that. There are fees to take the testing, and then there's also fees on an ongoing basis every 2 years, just like any certification would have.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that that's why I'm seeking to find out, like, what those costs would be.
Oh, how much would be if somebody wasn't paying, Representative Schultz, you're saying? How much would be if somebody was paying out of pocket?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Ms. Thomas, can you assist with that, or can somebody assist? What it would cost somebody if they were going to pay themselves?
So when I looked
into that,
and if we weren't.
Yeah, right, if we weren't understood, yeah. Yeah, what the cost would be without subsidy from the state if somebody said, I want to do this. Yeah, if you can please.
Hi, my name is Lauren Spencer. When I looked into it back in 2022, it was about $1,200 for the class. And then I think it's like $100 for the test fee. And then I think there's also a fee for the observer to come out, but I'm not sure how much that is.
Representative Schultz. Okay, got that. And Representative Greenman, I think you. Yep, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Sensimira, for bringing this bill. And I think the story that your testifier, Tiffany Behrens, am I pronouncing that right? Yeah. One, thank you for coming to share your story. I think it also illustrates something we've been talking about more broadly in this conversation, which is the story you told about not having paid family medical leave when at the birth of your child, and how, particularly as a server, you're probably working for a small business, how important it is that we ensure that every worker has that so that your kid gets a great start, but also that is one of the pieces as we think about childcare and the childcare environment. People being able to stay home with their children at the beginning of their lives are actually part of the childcare solution, and people obviously need to have a wage replacement to do that. So I know that's not why you're up here testifying, but I do think it really illustrates the comprehensive nature of this conversation that we're having, whether it's paid family leave, whether it's childcare support. So I just wanted to say that and say thank you. I think that I come from a family of childcare providers. Both my father is an early childcare provider. I know the amazing and very hard work you do. I also know the passion you bring to it. And so we absolutely should be in supporting these professionals. And I just want to thank you for telling your story.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Chair Baker.
And again, I want to kind of echo on what Representative Greenman was saying, too. I want to actually put a shout out to Mom for watching the little one today. You know, for you to be here, that was an important story to hear. And again, and sort of circling back to our work here in a very high level. Paid family medical leave can be done in a way that I think that can be right-sized. We've talked about that a lot around this table. I know that Ms. Behrens seemed like she was out for a couple of months, probably a small business owner. That's, in my mind, 8 weeks. But what we are also doing here, members, and again, this is to families out there. Minnesota is raising taxes. We raise taxes when you have a vehicle registration from last year. That went up a lot. There's a new tax coming out next year with the paid family. And maybe I'm suggesting we start looking at maybe shaving off some benefits so that folks like Ms. Behrens can actually take that 8 weeks off or 6 weeks off. That still is really reasonable to make sure she's got an income. So as we kind of work through all of this, the delivery fee tax that came out last year, licensing fees, those are kind of things that we can't forget about. We are also part of the problem to make it harder for families to get child care in Minnesota. This is the reality of what we are doing. So we have to be careful about these ideas and the benefits that we want to do, but what cost is it going to do? Because our employers are going to raise the cost of childcare because they have to, because they have a cost coming for paid family. There's other things, so we just have to make sure we don't ignore those important parts of this you know, it's easy to kind of like poo-poo it and, you know, not worry about it, but it's reality. So I just wanted to make sure that we remind ourselves of what we are doing here when we raise any kind of fees. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And I'll note this is our last bill on child care today. And so I think we'll kind of I'm glad that we're having this discussion, kind of opening it out somewhat. So Representative Frazier, I think you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Samura, for bringing the bill. And thank you for highlighting the disparities in terms of salaries for some of our workers. But in regards to our child care workers, which we know that foundationally, if we don't have that, many of those workers don't get a chance to go to work, and they don't have those careers, so it's very important. And thanks again to the testifier for sharing your story. And I'd just like to echo what Representative Greenman said. I mean, the reason we're putting these programs in place, and they're long overdue. They are long overdue. I think we can say that. The reason we're putting these programs in place so that folks like you would have the opportunity to spend that time bonding with your child and taking care of yourself before you go back into your job. And you'd be able to do that without this thought of an anxiety around having financial ruin. And I think that's a very important thing. And we talk about our taxes here, but I just want to point out those taxes, they do pay for something. They pay for many of the great services that make Minnesota one of the greatest states to live in this country. We've got people coming to this state because we have those services and we resource them. There's no if, ands, or but about it. We have to pay for things. If you want nice things, you have to pay for them. And that is what our taxes do. We could be like other states. We could look at all the other states that have much lower taxes. But you know what else they have? Much less resources. They don't have good parks. They don't have a good economy. They don't have good schools. We have our struggles here. But the taxes that we put out there for folks, people benefit from the resources that they provide. And we can't forget that. Do a 50-state survey. Look at those states that we want to compare it to with those low taxes and look at how many services and look at how many things they don't provide for their residents there. And I don't want to be those states.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Zlesnikar.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you. My question is about for the YWCA. You stated that it's statewide. From what I understand, this is an online program that's free training for people to be in the child care, which I think is, I don't have any questions with that. My question is it a first come, first serve for people that apply to it, or are you looking at regions that have the need? Because my question is, in the report that Deed gave us today on page 6, Greater Minnesota has 16% less child care access than the metro, and it has 11% less than all of Minnesota. So I guess I'm curious as to how you would address that, because my ask would be that we level this so that Greater Minnesota becomes closer to the state average, so that we can make sure the entire state is served.
Stephanie Thomas, not sure or Lauren Spencer, not sure who. Hey, please, Stephanie Thomas. Yeah.
Stephanie Thomas. So many of our program participants come from referrals from centers. So we reach out to all centers. We run in a cohort basis, and we do currently have a waiting list. So people are entered into that based on the waiting list. We serve 11, we've served in the 11 counties, and our goal in the next 2 years is to continue to have more recruitment. In order to continue to serve. But right now it is based on center tip. I mean, people can come individually, but oftentimes centers have people that they're trying to get into the program too.
Representative Sensenmurray, you want to say something too, perhaps? I couldn't tell. Okay. Representative Zlesnikar, follow up.
Thank you. Just one final question,
yeah.
Chair Pinto.
Yeah.
So there's 87 counties, so if I heard this right, this is only available to 11 counties?
Stephanie, Ms. Thomas?
It's available to everyone. Those are the people that have come into the program so far.
Thus far, okay. Nothing further there. Okay, Representative Schultz, you had a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to be very brief, especially since this is the last child care bill, to my understanding. I've just had questions about the office, and I'm not going to go into detail because we're short on time. The Office of Child Care Community Partnerships is brand new the last 2 years.
Yep.
We've got a 20-page report that's in our packets today. I know we haven't discussed that. I'm sure Deed could talk about it. I don't want to go into that because of the shortness of time. I will just say, like, it's just administering grants and then delivering us a 20-page report. And I just question whether this should be something we move forward with this this biennium.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. I guess maybe we won't call up Deed now, I guess. But, yeah, certainly worthy of conversations if you have those concerns. And Deed can be aware of those concerns and perhaps follow up with you as well. Anything else members have, just as we're getting ready to wrap up? Members, if you can just look at the A1 amendment, just because I think this is useful, as this is our last bill, because I think the structure of it makes something really apparent. So we've already heard the people who do early care and education, the workers, get paid really low wages and no benefits, such that if you look at line 1.9, this appropriation would only go to people who are on the waiting list for the current programs we have for super low-income people to get child care and early learning. Then we have a waiting list for those programs. So every one of these people, I mean, in Ms. Barron's case, I so much appreciate the testimony. You know, her mom can't do this long-term is what I'm hearing from her. Mom's the knee surgeries, and she's got a broken arm, I think you said, and she's getting elderly. The challenge there, what people do is they end up having the new boyfriend or the neighbor down the hall take care of their kid. Like, we want them to be in high-quality early care and learning. Everybody who's providing this care, including Ms. Behrens, is supporting all kinds of other employees, and it's the workforce behind the workforce. And we have a situation right now where we have waiting lists on the programs for low-income people that aren't even fully funded. And so I know we're in a challenging situation right now, but I guess I want to highlight for members just this idea of saying that the people who do this work are paid so little that they're eligible for subsidies that they don't receive. Presumably then there's other public assistance programs they get. And if they drop out of the child care workforce, then we lose a whole bunch of other pieces of the workforce because they're not providing care for people's children. So just the structure of this, I think, highlights kind of how messed up the system is. And we've been doing our best over a number of years to change it. But we need to recognize what an important sector this is, what important work it is, in the short run and the long run, and how very tied it is to our workforce and economic development. So I appreciate the time we spent today. Representative Sensenmura, last words on your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and Baker, again for this bringing this bill and this discussion. I want to make a correction. I think when I was introducing the bill, I said that participants get a CDL. I meant a CDA, but I think, you know, we could make an argument of whether it's harder to drive a truck or whether it's harder to manage a classroom of 10 toddlers.
No contest.
I know both are things that I cannot do. And so that's why I'm really, you know, glad to be able to be here today, uplifting the stories of the workers who, like Chair Pinto said, the workforce behind the workforce. Ms. Barron, Ms. Spencer, thank you so much for being here today. You know, when I write my monthly check for childcare for my son, it's certainly more, Representative Schultz, than I want to pay, but I often say that it's like the most uncomplicated money I ever spend, because good childcare, knowing that your kids are safe, cared for, like, that is priceless. And it allows me to do the work that I want to do here with you all. So happy to be able to uplift the workers here.
Thank you so much, Representative Sensenmura. We want to support the people who are doing that work and, heck, maybe get their wages up somewhat to be closer to as if they did have a CDL. So with that, the chair lays over House File 2266 as amended for future consideration. Then our final bill, and I'll apologize to testifiers as you make your way up, that we're tight on time here. And the final bill is House File 2039. Representative Greenman, if you can move, bring that before us.
So moved.
Thank you. And then there's an amendment. I'm assuming Representative Sensenmura, you want that moved. So Representative Greenman, if you're willing to do that.
I'd move the A1 amendment.
Thank you so much. And it looks like just a few technical issues in the amendment to fix. So we'll see. Members, any questions about the amendment? Not seeing any. All in favor of approval of the A1 amendment, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. House File 2039, as amended, is before us. Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you, Chair and members. So HF 2039, we're kind of moving up the spectrum of age. We are talking about workforce opportunities for youth ages 14 to 24 in every part of our state. So this program distributes funding across our state to workforce area boards, which then provide employment opportunities for high school students, for teenagers, for youth in our communities. I want to leave time for my testifiers. You know, I will just say that I was a participant in my city's program. There's a letter in your packet from Mayor Fry of Minneapolis talking about the Step Up program. I was one of the first participants in Step Up, which provides employment opportunities across the city of Minneapolis to youth. In 2007, I was a step-up intern at U.S. Bank. Learned very quickly what I didn't want to do, which was work in corporate America, which, you know, learning what you don't want to do is one of the great, you know, opportunities of youth workforce. And through their kind of leadership program and through their training, also learned skills such as, you know, building a resume. Also remember one of the most important things they said was always floss before a job interview, which good advice there.
Very practical.
And so just really incredible program happening in Minneapolis and across our state, and I'll give it up to my testifiers to share a little bit.
And I'll apologize for the tight time that we need to be out of here by 10, so just a minute from each of you, I'm afraid. But our first testifier, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. I'm Nicole Swanson, the director of Anoka County Job Training Center. Thank you, Chair Pinto and Chair Baker. Representative Senator Murrah, and members of the committee. My name is Nicole Swanson with the Minnesota Association of Workforce Boards. We're here today to support this appropriation for the Minnesota Youth Program, or MYP, a program that our boards implement across every county in the state. Because of MYP, young people are able to access paid work experience. They're able to learn while earning a paycheck. They're able to explore career opportunities, receive career advising, and imagine themselves in different high-growth, high-wage fields. The impact of investing early is lifelong for these young people who are most at risk in facing significant barriers. There is also serious impact for employers who need employees that are work-ready and equipped with those basic work skills before they get hired. We also see the impact in our communities when we keep our young people engaged in positive activities and integrated in the community fabric. Investment had not increased above $4 million since 2003. When the legislature made the increase last year, we were able to show that this additional investment was a big deal for Minnesota youth. Our local workforce development boards and community organizations were able to get those additional dollars to work right away, nearly doubling what we did in the previous biennium. The need for this investment is clear, and the program is ready to deliver. Without this appropriation, our providers will be forced to limit work experience placements. Thousands fewer youth will have access to impactful programming. The number of schools we provide career advising support to will be significantly diminished. There isn't other funding available for us to fall back on. Minnesota faces ongoing cuts in federal youth funding. Last year, there was a proposal to completely zero out federal youth workforce development funds. This bill would make a Minnesota investment in preparing Minnesota's youth for successful and stable careers. Thank you, Representative Senator Murrah, for carrying this bill, and chairs for the opportunity to speak regarding this.
Thank you for your testimony. And next testifier, please identify yourself and proceed. And welcome.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Aiden Grabo, and I am part of the Rochester WDI Youth Program, which is funded by the Minnesota Youth Program. As part of the program, I've learned a lot of the highlights have been the ability to learn the necessary hard and soft skills in construction. I have built benches, bird feeders, and sheds. Most recently, I have become a foreman-like teacher aide for my fellow classmates, which has allowed me to grow my leadership skills. This experience within the Minnesota Youth
Can we get tip your microphone a tiny bit closer to you, though? Maybe Representative Senator Murrah can help you if it's – yeah, please.
This experience within the Minnesota Youth Program has given me understanding on what my fit in the world of work might be. I've been able to learn more about my future career within the program that I have been a part of it. Oopsies. This makes me feel honored to speak to you today as a testament of what the Minnesota Youth Program provides to students and young adults like me. Within this program, I would most likely have been lost in which direction I wanted to go for my further career. Each of your communities have young people like me. Minnesota needs more support on our young people, not fewer, as this critical moment in time. Please invest in us youth this year by making this investment in the Minnesota Youth Program. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for being here and for your work. We The third testifier was going to be a recorded video presentation. We're having trouble bringing it up. And also, I think at this point, what we're going to do is have it sent around to members. We'll post it as well and have that. So is there anybody else? Yeah, my apologies for that. Anybody else wish to testify on the bill? Not seeing any. So we'll close that up. And any questions or comments about the youth program? As I maybe I'll just note, my understanding is this is a program that supplements wages for young people and so kind of provides, I think it's a minimum wage. Employers can choose to add to it. But as we look at our different portfolio of youth programs, that's what this one does. Representative Sensenmura, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Any questions or comments anybody has then? Okay, not seeing anything further. Okay, Representative Sensenmura, final words on House File 2039 as amended.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. So, you know, 4,000 youth were, you know, gainfully employed through this program last year. 40,000 youth benefited from the in-school outreach and training. There's a really comprehensive annual report, which I'll have sent out to the committee, that talks about what this program is doing in every area of the state for every member of this committee. Just wanted to highlight kind of two youth comments about participants in the program. So one youth said, "This program marked the beginning of my dream to be a biologist. Without this, I wouldn't have gained this experience and background knowledge that could help me in my future." Another participant said, "Getting that check, yes, ma'am, getting to explore new things and learn every day." So this program is meeting youth where they are at and encourage the committee to invest in this program. Thank you.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, Representative Sensenmura. And a reminder, members, we had our Youth Day maybe a week and a half ago or so. We heard some individual proposals. This is a more blanket competitive grant program. Okay, not seeing anything further. Chair Baker, is there anything you want to say about the hearing tomorrow?
It'll be another full day, so see you all then.
We've got a couple full days coming up before we head into budget next week. Members, thank you much. And members of the public, certainly feel free to be in touch with all of us. We know this is a challenging time. With that, we are closing up the meeting. We're adjourned.